Nama Om Ishtipat. Powerfully, very boldly. So he gets maximum marks, I think, for introducing very nicely with some nice chart and example, and also for being very humble and polite in his presentation, and for flow and facing audience and all that. I don't know, totally must have surely crossed 70. He got very good marks in many of them. See, one of the, there are two purposes of this meeting. One is to look into our own lives and hearts and understand these difficult questions. The questions what I have raised here, if you see, in all the high wife meetings, in all the three levels, it's not that only karmis get this question. Don't be surprised if devotees get these questions. Even after becoming a devotee, such questions can come and go in the heart of a devotee. So one thing is to be convinced ourselves about what is the real truth. And then secondly, we should be able to convince others. So if we are not convinced ourselves, how are we going to convince others, isn't it? So we have to be convinced. And when we talk of ourselves being convinced, we don't have to imagine anything, or we don't have to accept something just because it is said in the scripture. The purpose of this meeting is to open up the facts given in the scriptures, put them on the table, analyze them and try to understand them, why they say what they say. That is the purpose. And when we understand it well, then we will be satisfied with the explanation given by the scripture. So every one of these topics we have to analyze like that. That is the purpose of this meeting. So this point of progress that the whole discussion was going on today is very nice. At the same time, I would like to mention the future speakers. I have certainly some expectation that besides defeating the materialists making such arguments, we have to also present something positive, something very positive that is substituting for the need. It shouldn't be, our meeting shouldn't be one-sided in terms of just proving that the allegation put forth by materialist is wrong. It shouldn't just stop there. It has to proceed from there and then come to a point where we explain the spiritual part little more than what was presented today. That's my feeling. So there are many sections of Prabhupada's conversation about this topic, in which he talks to others. So when we talk of economic development, what do we mean? Prabhupada gives a simple example. Converting a hut into a skyscraper building. This is economic development, Prabhupada says in one place. So the Americans or the Westerners think that why do we live in small huts and go to the in the forest for passing stool and urine? Why can't we have very nice skyscraper buildings? Nice communication systems? Why can't we have nice transportation systems? Why can't we have nice cushion beds, nice hotels, restaurants? We don't have to cook at home, we can go to hotels. So improving in this manner is called as economic development. It's not just only money, making more money, it's also comforts, money plus comforts. On the other hand, some Westerners or even people from other countries, they think the Indians are like fatalists, which means they think that the Indians simply remain where they are. They are stagnant. They just whatever is there in their life, if they are born mediocre, they remain mediocre. They don't grow and make progress and develop all these facilities and comforts like we are doing. They don't know how to enjoy life. So this is one of the accusations by such people who are making so-called progress in material life. So Prabhupada gives many arguments. In fact, I would like to read some of them and try to understand along with all of you. The arguments are so powerful. We can fold our palms and bow down to the feet of Prabhupada for enlightening us so well. So almost four or five points Prabhupada makes against this kind of allegation. which we would like to read and understand. See, first here, this we discussed in one meeting before, so I will not talk elaborately about this. Mr. Krishna Prabhu is saying here, the traditional charge against Hinduism is that it is fatalistic, that it inhibits progress by making people slaves to the belief in the inevitability of what is to happen, which means the fate. How far is this charge true? He is asking Prabhupada. The meaning of this question is simple. He says that Hindus have a traditional belief that ultimately your fate is decided. That means, you know, ultimately if this is your fate, that's all you will get. There's no point in working hard. So don't work hard. Just worship God, do bhajan and be happy. So how far is this true? So Prabhupada is here saying, it's a false charge that very system inhibits progress of mankind. What is that progress? A dog's jumping is progress? A dog is running here and there on four legs, and you are running on four wheels, is that progress? The Vedic system is this. The human being has a certain amount of energy, better energy than animals, better consciousness, and that energy should be utilized for spiritual advancement. Whole Vedic system is meant for spiritual advancement. Human energy is employed in a more exalted direction than to compete with the dog. Consequently, sometimes those who have no idea of religion notice that the Indian saintly persons are not working hard like dogs. Spiritually uncultured people think that dog raises life, but actual life is spiritual progress. The human being should exert his energy for that thing which he did not get in many lives. Through many lives, the soul has been in the forms of dogs or demigods or cats or birds or insects. The transmigration is going on. The dog is busy for sense gratification. Where is food? Where is shelter? Where is a mate? How to defend? And the man is also doing the same business in different ways. Even a small insect is struggling for his existence. So Shastra says, we have done this in many lifetimes, past lives, and if we don't get out of the struggle for existence, we will have to do them again in many future lives. So these things should be stopped. So this is the first point. Basically, when we talk of arguing, even before you argue, first you have to clarify what are you arguing about. So when we talk of progress, there is material progress, which the materialistic people are talking about. Why don't you people also work hard and make progress like we are making? You know, we were living in a hut and now we are in skyscraper. We have such facilities. Why don't you also work like that? Why you people are lazy? So there is material progress, what they are talking about. But we are more interested in spiritual progress, which is stopping the struggle for existence in different material bodies. So this is the first argument Prabhupada makes, that when we talk of progress, actual progress is not in the material platform, it's on the spiritual platform. Secondly, he says that no matter what material body you achieve, you cannot improve the pleasures in each of these bodies. Because the pleasure is called as a stored pleasure. So here Prabhupada will argue further. He is saying here, material pleasure which is due simply to this material body is essentially the same in any body. A dog has a material body and I have a material body. So my sex pleasure and the dog's sex pleasure is the same. He is saying. Of course, the dog is not afraid of having sex on the street in front of everyone. We hide it in a nice apartment, that's all. But the activity is the same, there is no difference. And then he is saying here further. According to different types of body, there are some external differences in the pleasure. But the basic amount and quality, that is quantity and quality of the pleasure, has very well defined limitations. That is called destiny. A pig has a certain type of body and he is eatable as stool. That's destined. You cannot change it. Let the pig eat halwa. No, that's not possible. Because the soul currently has a particular type of body, he must eat a particular type of food. Can anyone, any scientist, improve the standard of living of a pig? Is it possible? So, the so-called civilized man who boasts, instead of living in that hut made of leaves, we are living in a skyscraper building. This is advancement, they say. But the Vedic civilization says, no, this is not advancement. Real advancement is self-realization. How much you have realized your relationship with God?
is the second point.
The same. That the quantity and quality of pleasure or pain is fixed, cannot be changed. Actually, this point requires little elaboration. Prabhupada says, sometimes a man is ugly looking, but he has a very beautiful wife. In one of the purpose of the rites. So, although he has a very ugly looking body, twisted and turned face, he may have so many pimples, he may look like an old man, but he has a wife who is very young and beautiful. So that is his destiny. According to his destiny, he has got like that. Similarly, sometimes you find a man born in a family where the father has left behind crores of rupees. Isn't it? This fellow is not so intelligent. He never went to school. He dropped out in 8th standard. But he has a lot of money at his house. He has got crores and crores of rupees left behind by his father. And he is going in car, you know, going to market, going here, going there, you know, traveling for a world tour and everything. You find some people like that. And so this comes from the family. So it's already fixed that this person is due for enjoying that kind of wealth and facility. On the other hand, you find somebody is really intelligent. There are many intelligent scientists and mathematicians who want some grants or money for doing some research, and they don't have enough money. There are many people who have intelligence to do good work, but they don't have wealth. That is why the wealth that one possesses, and the relatives and friends that one gets, and the facilities that one enjoys, all these things are fixed, which is called as destiny, and they cannot be changed. So Prabhupada gave the examples now, the quantity and quality of pleasure and pain. So he gave the example of the pig. Pigs, shrotam, chakshu, sparsham, rasanam, granam, all are already defined. These parameters are defined at the time of birth only. He has to, as soon as he sees a stool, he will be immediately attracted to that, the smell. When you smell stool, you immediately turn your face away. Or plug your nose immediately. Whereas the pig is smelling, he will come dashing towards it to eat it. That is how the senses are created. So his quality of pleasure is that. He finds pleasure there. That is how. So every living body, not only the pig is one example. Even if you try to feed halwa, a pig cannot eat it. For a human being, he has different kind of food. Like amongst human beings also, we find different people eat different things, different quality foods. So their nature, and the quantity of pleasure and pain, that the quantum of pleasure and pain is decided at the time of birth only. If you try to escape, you know what will happen? If you try to escape some quantity of pain that's supposed to come, what will happen? Exactly. It will manifest in another form. Like in the West, for example, somebody may say they have made so much progress. See, they have smooth roads, but we have Indian roads, you see how horrible they are. They have smooth roads, nice facilities, everything is at their fingertips. So physically they are very comfortable, but mentally very, very disturbed. Actually, the mental disturbance, you can have a whole lecture on that only. That kind of mental disturbance the average American has. So there is no assurance if you go out in the morning that you will safely come back in the evening. Certainly India is not that bad. I heard in New York they have about 800 gangsters carrying machine guns. 800 in New York only. Can you imagine? And any time these gangsters, they break out and come in the street, and all around people have to surrender their purses, surrender their things, and then shoot anybody at any time. And they come in a big gang, not one or two. They ghetto people and they demand things. So this is one small example. We can give innumerable examples for how people have anxiety and fear. And in America, anybody can sue anybody at any time. A child can sue the father, you know that? Child can sue the teacher. In the school, if the teacher tells the child, you didn't finish your homework, I'll slap you, the teacher says. Immediately the child can go to court and say that this teacher spoke vulgar words and she made me undergo psychological depression by her speech. So I am suing her and she has to pay me $2,000 or $5,000. Yeah, and people keep paying back and forth the same. That if you are an American citizen, you will come to know. You ask people living in America, you will come to know that anybody can sue anybody there. And because they know a lot of psychology now, that has caused more problem now. They will say, you know, you didn't beat the child, but you psychologically threatened the child, interrogated the child, so you have to pay $5,000. So these things lead to tremendous anxiety. Teachers have to cajole the children and keep them in their place, you know, so that they don't harm them in any way. In fact, some children threaten the teachers. I was reading one of the reports how the turnover of teachers in the schools and colleges is so rapid, because the teachers have to keep good relations with the children and students, so they will not be sued in the court. So we can give innumerable examples like this, how people live a life of threat. What happens is the physical pains have got transformed into mental pains. Because if you escape one, it has to come somewhere else. You can't, like, you know, one fellow was putting this gooseberry, you know, gooseberry, he got from the tree. Actually, he wanted to carry as many as he could, you know. So he got more and more gooseberries in the tree, in bunches, and removed the gooseberries and started putting in a sack. And he told his friend, "I am so happy today. My sack is, you know, I'm going on adding and sack is tolerating, you know." Sometimes you see the sack in a bulge, you know, all four directions. He kept putting it inside, he was very happy. So every time he was putting one gooseberry inside, what was happening? One gooseberry was going out. Nellikai, nellikai. Nellikai, you know. So he was putting one, and another one was going out there. So he was thinking, "Hey, very good, so many are going inside, huh?" And packing more and more, and another one by one was going out. Later on, when he did the bag like this, he found practically hundreds outside. In the same way, he may think, "Oh, wonderful, we have increased our happiness. We have mobile, we have this, we have that, so many facilities we have." Some of them come back to you in the form of physical pain also. Like this mobile, if I hold it continuously for some time, after something gets heated up. You know, while it gets heated up, there is a reaction it undergoes with our head. Later on you find severe pain. There is some radioactive substance inside. Yeah, you used to feel severe pain when you use it for a longer time. It's very deadly actually. Okay, now somebody may say, "Oh, okay, now we have a earphone, you know, you put a earphone and keep, you know, so that..." But many times you try to hear the earphone, it is not so clear, you remove the earphone and try to and use it directly, you know. So you see that, yeah, and then again you get that headache. Or you keep it in the chest, you know, so you can get nice, directly it can affect your heart. So the point is, if you try to escape the misery is offered by material nature and other living beings, what happens? It comes and reappears in another form. It has to come. That's why the quantum of pleasure and pain and the quality of pleasure and pain are all fixed at the time of your birth. All of you here, many of you come from engineering families and, you know, medical family, engineering studies and medical studies. So it is destined that you will have a good education, you will have a you will be born in a good family and you will earn good salary, you will be happy. So it is destined, otherwise you can't get that. So now the question is, okay, so what? If it is destined, so what do you want to say? So a spiritualist will not work hard to improve his destiny, because he knows that no matter how much I try to improve my destiny, it may apparently improve, but then behind me something will happen. Something else will be taken away. You understand, no? You can't keep two legs in two boats. So you can't achieve more facilities at the same time keep the existing destined pleasures. It's not possible. You will see that somewhere else it goes off. Like that. Simple example Prabhupada gives later about the Ford. Somebody is born in a Ford company. So right from birth he is born with a silver spoon. He easily gets money. Now if an ordinary person, you know, having a Luna going in the street wants to become like Ford, how much he has to work hard? See, problem is in the modern times the greed is fueled more and more. Everyone thinks that, you know, I have to become rich, I have to have a bungalow, I have to have a car, I have to have this. So everyone has made up their mind that from cycle I'll go to Luna, from Luna I'll go to scooter, from scooter I'll go to Maruti, from Maruti I have to someday aim at Mercedes Benz. This is with respect to my vehicle, my vahan. And then with respect to my house, I'll proceed from chal to, you know, you know, one room flat, and then two room flat, and then 3 BHK, 5 BHK, like that, and then have individual, maybe in a row house, and then individual bungalow. I'll proceed like this, little by little, like that. Then I'll be having a skyscraper building. Then I'll buy 2-3 more houses and leave them for rent also, and make more money like that. People think like that. In the same way, you know, nowadays even ordinary people wear the safari, you know that? But one time, when somebody wears safari, he's supposed to be a very, you know, outstanding man. Nowadays, Pion, Scavenger, everyone comes in Safari. Isn't it? You have seen that? Isn't it? You don't know who can wear and who cannot wear. There is no difference really now. The other day I saw one family when they had gone to drop on Maharaj in the airport. I saw one pakka, totally village family. You know, one stout lady with her stout daughter, mother and daughter, you know. And the two, three small kids all making sound, you know, for five children. And it seems they were sending their son abroad, it seems, you know. He's going for some business, you know. And all these ladies are having one on mobile, you know, all of them carrying a mobile, talking on mobile, you know. They're talking some local language. So it has become very common now, you know, using mobile, going in plane. You know, actually, very wealthy people belonging to royal families, you know, they may send their children to go to London to do barrister, you know, and come back, or send them to Harvard or, you know, Cambridge. But nowadays, you know, people going on flight, someday it will become like our general compartment in a train, I think. Going in plane will become like that. Don't be surprised, it's not very far. It can become like that. You will find somebody coming with a fish basket there. because all the average families are aiming at that. Now some of these village people, they are sending their sons to Kuwait and Dubai, and they are earning a lot of money. And they say, you people are going in planes, we also can go. Huh? You think, you know, only you people can, educated people can go in planes? So we are uneducated, illiterate, so we will also go in planes. That means the greed is fueled. That we want to prove that we are also like you. You wear safari, we will also wear safari. But if you look at them, you can know that, you know, these people are unfit. You know, they are not educated, they are not engineers, they are not doctors, they are not chartered accountants, they are not in a high position. When they open their mouth, you come to know who they are. No? Yeah. But they want to wear safari, they want to go in planes, you know. They want to have a lot of money, they want to have bungalow. You know? And they want to prove that they are also great. We have achieved success, we have also reached the frontiers, you know? Like you. You know? Don't think we are lower. They want to prove. Many of the farmers, they want to show the world that my sons are not ordinary. I will put him in engineering, even if he takes 7 years to pass. No problem. Yeah. They want to prove to the world. Huh? Because this is what they consider to be success. So this is material life. You try to change the destiny by increasing pleasure, reducing pain. There is a verse in Samkanta which Avadhut Brahman says, you know, people in this world try to increase the pleasure unlimitedly and completely eliminate pain. But the result they get is just the opposite. The misery has become abundant and they hardly find any pleasure. He says exactly the opposite. Because the more we struggle, again and again, your destiny will push you back to get only what you deserve, not more than that. Like that. So, when a spiritualist knows that the material destiny cannot be changed, you know, and everyone is destined for something, then he does not unnecessarily focus in that direction. See a purpose is here. Purpose is about that. So they are busy at the office, very busy, very busy. If you want to see that fellow, he'll say, I am very busy now. But what is the result of your being so busy? Well, he says that, I take 2 pieces of toast and 1 cup of tea, that's all. And for this purpose you are so busy. So he is busy all day simply so that in the evening he can look at his account book and say, oh, the balance had been $1,000 and now it has become 2,000. That is his satisfaction. But still he will have the same 2 pieces of bread and 1 cup of tea. Even though he has increased his balance from 1 to 2,000, or 2 to 3,000. And still he will work hard. That's why the karmis are called mudhas. So he is saying here, Papa, such a beautiful point he is saying here, that here is, you know what he says, the ass stands at the washerman's door, eating the small clumps of grass, while the washerman loads him up again. The ass has no sense to think, if I get out of the clutches of this washerman, I can get grass anywhere. Why am I carrying so much? So third point here, Papa is talking about working hard. any amount of mental endeavor will not improve our situation. So we can write the examples of, you know, two toasts of bread and one cup of tea. Only with eating, Prabhupada also says another thing, that even if you have a residence which has, you know, 50 rooms, how many rooms are you going to live in? You can only live in one room. Have you seen in Pune some people have big house, like an old woman and old man living in one corner of the house, you know. Also the house may have 20-30 rooms, you know. So you cannot live in many rooms. We are not Krishna to live in many rooms, you know, or many houses. Similarly eating, similarly in terms of living lifestyle, even a person who earns a lot, he is not going to have much difference in the sex life. Or even in terms of sleeping also. As soon as you lie down and close your eyes, our sleeping and a dog sleeping is not much different. We are sleeping in our bed and dog sleeping in the platform. It's the same thing. The pleasure of sleeping is the same. So again, it reflects the second point which we discussed, the stored pleasure destiny. So any amount of material endeavor will not improve our situation of happiness and suffering. So you can ask, if anybody argues in this manner, like the one which you argued in the beginning, so we have to ask them clearly, okay, why do you argue? What way you want to make progress? Immediately they will say, in terms of, immediately that material thing will come, talk will come about the material benefits. Yeah? Generally cannot be changed. And then you take it, destiny cannot be changed. You take it like that. When you come to the last point, I'll say more about that. But generally speaking, destiny cannot be changed. Everyone's Prabhupada will clearly explain that towards the end about this destiny point. One last point when you come, that time I'll explain more. And then he's saying here another point about being busy and not being busy. That one nice point Prabhupada is making. In the high court, a judge is sitting soberly, apparently doing nothing, and is getting a high salary. And another man in the same court is working hard all day long, rubber stamping, and not even getting 1/10 of the judge's salary. So he is thinking, I am so busy working so hard, yet I am not getting a good salary, and this man is just sitting on the bench and he is getting such a fat salary. The criticism of Hinduism as inhibiting progress is like that. It comes out of ignorance. In the Vedic civilization, the Vedic civilization is meant for intelligent person. This is one way Prabhupada argues. There is another interesting argument Prabhupada presents here. See here about Kumbh Mela thing. So that is from one angle. Another angle, you see what he says. Correct. Here it is then. Very good point. So in our internship of Krishna consciousness, our main business is how to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. We are not enthusiastic about opening big factories with big money earning machines. No. We are satisfied with whatever material happiness and distress we are destined. But we are very good to utilize our energy for progressing in Krishna consciousness. This is the point. So this gives the answer to our Mandavutubu's question. That what about a spiritual society? No, don't you need money? No, we don't need money. That is the answer. Whatever money is destined to us, we will use that in Krishna service. Like for example, in Pune we are doing so much preaching, but we don't have money like bigger temples, isn't it? You know, we just get every month what we need, and we are spending and things going on. So no problem. But assume that, you know, Krishna is sending some big Karodapati and he says, sir, I would like to build a 20-crore temple for Pune. ISKCON Pune. Pune is such an important city, and I got some 20 crores, you want to make a temple. You say, yes sir, please make it. So make a nice temple, then you'll have a big hall. So we will not cut our legs according to chapel size. We'll cut the chapel according to our leg size. Like, that's the meaning of devotee. See what Prabhupada says here. No, we are satisfied with whatever material happiness and distress we are destined. But we are very good to utilize our energy for progressing in Krishna consciousness. That's the point. See what Prabhupada says here. So, the Vedic system of civilization is meant for realizing God. In the Vedic system, people try for that. Actually, the followers of Varnashram Dharma, they never tried for economic development. Not only now, even in the past. You will find in India still millions of people taking bath in the Ganges during Kumbh Mela. At the Kumbh Mela, millions of people come to take bath in the Ganges because they are interested in how to become spiritually liberated from this material world. They are not lazy. They travel thousands of miles to take bath in the Ganges at the holy place of Prayag. So although they are not busy in dog's race, these people are not lazy. And then Prabhupada quotes this verse, Yanisha Sarva Bhutana Tasyam Jagrat Samyami. Then he says, the self-controlled man wakes up very early, practically in the middle of the night, and works for spiritual realization, while others are sleeping. Similarly, during the daytime, the dogs and asses think, we are working, but these spiritualists, they are not working. So, there are two different platforms, material and spiritual. Followers of the Vedic civilization, although nowadays it is little distorted, still these people are not lazy. They are very busy. Not only very, very busy, but also they are trying to become self-realized from the very beginning of life. They are so busy that they want to begin the busyness from their very childhood. Therefore, it is wrong to think that they are lazy. See, now Prabhupada has given another side argument. Vedic life, people, are they lazy or busy? So, first two arguments which I spoke, read out, what was that argument? The lazy viewpoint, Prabhupada is saying, there is another mic, that cordless mic. There are one who is following the path of God. That means he doesn't work hard materially, but because his consciousness is of a higher nature, exalted nature, he does work, tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido, that type of work he does. And by that he gets happiness. Whereas the person is a materialist, he works hard to make his material situation better. Who is compared to a clerk? Yeah. Is that clear for everyone? So Prabhupada compared the Vedic person to a judge and modern materialist to a clerk, saying that, okay, even if you say our Vedic people are lazy, okay, take it that they are lazy. It's possible that they may appear to be lazy. They are going to Kumbh Mela, you know. Yeah. Sorry, not Kumbh Mela. I mean, they may be sitting and, you know, just practicing chanting like that. And from another viewpoint, from busy viewpoint, what Prabhupada gave example? Two examples he gives. One is Kumbh Mela example. So three examples Prabhupada gave there. One is, when it comes to Kumbh Mela, a Vedic follower, he may not mind going thousands of miles to go and take a dip so that he may become liberated from this world, understanding that that is real progress in life like that. One time, Girdhar was telling this, relating this example. He was telling that, you know, one rickshawala was going to Kumbh Mela and Maharaj told him that I'll pay you a lot of money. Please kindly drop me there. He said, no, Swamiji, and I'm going to take a dip in the Kumbh Mela. Maharaj said, I'll pay you triple amount for this trip. He said, even if you pay me 10 times, I will not come. He said, this is time for taking dip in the holy waters, now I cannot come. He said, and Maharaj was so happy with that. Then he quotes it in many lectures. He said, just see this Indian, what a faith he has in God. He wants to go and take a dip in the Tribeni Sangam, where the three rivers meet. So he said, so the spiritual life, the Vedic follower is actually very happy. He is ready to devote his time, just like Kumbh Mela example Prabhupada gave. Thousands of miles they will travel and come. In India sometimes it exceeds several crores sometimes for the Kumbh Mela. So Prabhupada told that, you know, don't think they are lazy, they are very busy in that sense. Then he also said the example of waking up early. So it's not that in India people are good for nothing, they don't do any work, they are lazily wasting all the time. They rise early in the morning. Although Prabhupada says there is little perversion. So that question was the Ram Mohan asked that question. So he was telling that, you know, we see that in India people are degrading now, they don't have much spirituality, are they not similar to Americans? No, they are still not similar to Americans, because in India even the remnants of Vedic culture is so powerful. Like all of us, we come from some background because of which we could be sucked into Krishna consciousness very easily. Otherwise, if you go to the West, you have to actually see in the West how difficult it is to preach and make a Western person into a devotee. They have totally lost trace. Several generations are living a godless life, then it becomes very, very difficult. That's one thing. Another thing, Prabhupada one place said, even if a person is a Durga worshipper and a Hindu, he is superior to a Christian, Prabhupada said. Because Christians, they are like a frog in the well. They cannot come out of it very easily. But if a person is a demigod worshipper, like Durga, Shiva worshipper, he can easily become Krishna worshipper. He can switch over very easily. So, That point is waking early point. Even today you will find, no matter people how materialistic they are, like my parents for example, you know, they would say in this Margashish month, morning 3 o'clock everyone will be up. They would take bath, oil bath they would take, and then go to the temple, you know. And the temple you will find early morning there will be like 4-5 thousand people. Can you imagine? Huge temple, and it will be as if, you know, you are in the evening. Everywhere there will be pond in front of the temple. Now people will, you know, go and take the 3-drop bath and go into the temple, bow down to God and put flowers and put money. There will be karpur shown and everyone will be taking arati. There will be recitation of Vedic mantras going on. Early morning thousands of people in the temple you will find. Even if they rather go in mandir, you go and say, what a crowd in the morning, you saw? Like 4-5 thousand people in the morning, circumambulating. So they rise early in the morning. So the purpose is they are not lazy. Not that they are lying in the bed at 8 o'clock and asking for a bed coffee. They are not like that. They are very enthusiastic. And the thirdly, give the example of, oh, they are very, very busy right from childhood, kaumaram. Even before the child is born, they do garbhadhan sanskar. And then after the child is born, there are so many sanskaras to be performed, you know. You do this Namakaran sanskar, Annaprashan sanskar, you know. So many sanskaras, 40 sanskaras are performed. Many people, even today, they may not be great devotees, but some kind of sanskaras they all are having like that. So they take the child to Tirupati, you know, someplace they, mundane sanskar, they have, they shave up, like that. So the people have very great faith in God, and they are pretty active in doing those things. And what about celebrating festivals? Practically every Indian has some celebration at home. So celebrating a festival is not an easy job. First of all, money is also required, and you have to give your time and energy also, isn't it? And every festival is of a different nature. Are they not dynamic in doing that? So they are active, they are busy, these three examples he gives, to show that they are busy on the path of real progress, which is spiritual progress. When you do yajna, dana, tapa, for example, like, you know, people go to a holy place like, say, Tirupati, for example. That's why you're climbing up the hill. So that is tapas. You're doing the tapas. And you're chanting the Lord's name. That is yajna. And you're giving dan. What are you giving dan? Like, you know, one may shave up one's head and renounce the hair, which is very beautiful. Women also shave up when they come to Tirupati, if you see. Not an easy thing, isn't it? Then BTG picture had come, photograph. So they give their hair. In fact, many people know when I give my hair to God, that means I am renouncing my bodily duty for God's pleasure. Like that. So there is giving up. And you also give dan to God by giving some charity to brahmanas and things like that. By doing this yajna dana tapa, along with fasting, and doing some upavas, and they go to holy place, you know, and chanting mantras and circumambulating and all that, people make inch by inch, little by little progress. And the sanskaras are all, seeds are sown in the heart. And as they grow, what happens in some lifetime, they meet a devotee of the Lord and they can make very great progress back to Godhead. So people are working, people are busy in India, we see that, but they are busy in the path of right progress. They are not busy developing materially because they know that the destiny is fixed. It's clear, no? So that is the busy viewpoint. If you take the lazy viewpoint, okay, even if you say that, you know, they are lazy, there is one verse, very nice verse in first kind of Bhagavatam, it says, how does it begin? Asyavadartha. Sadapramatto vyavasaya buddhihi. Siddhenitarte nayateta tatra parishramam tatra samikshamanaha. Beautiful verse. You can repeat this, we'll repeat it. Very nice verse. Atakavirnama suyavadartha sadapramatto vyavasaya buddhihi. Siddhenyatarte nayate tatatra parishramam tatra samikshamanaha. They understand that is ataha kavir namasi avadartha syad apramatto. They are apramatta, means they are not mad people, the Vedic people. He says, vyavasaya buddhihi. Siddhenyatarte nayate tatra. I am ready to do some work. Will it give me some spiritual progress? They will ask you. If you say no spiritual progress, but you can turn a, you know, cottage like this into a skyscraper, then they will say, useless, parishramam, tatra samikshamanaha. That is simply a useless endeavor. Hell with it. I don't want that. Will you give me any spiritual progress? Call me, I will come and do seva. I don't want anything. I don't want any remuneration. So you are asking me to do something which is not seva for the Lord, For my middle progress, hell with it. Parishramam tatra samikshamanah. Like that. That is the consciousness. So that's why he says, okay, if you call them lazy, yes. If you want, you can call them lazy. Why? They are lazy for doing material activities. Like Prabhupada, for example, you tell him to speak of Krishna. Dead of the night, he'll jump up from his bed and he speaks. Any question you ask, one time somebody was asking a question and David was telling a person that it's getting late. Prabhupada, who is that getting late? I want to answer him. You started continuing with him. You know? In this discussion also, you see, when the devotee is telling Prabhupada, Mr. Krishna Prabhu, that, okay Prabhupada, let's go to the next question. Prabhupada, why next question? Are you clear about the progress or not? See, here exactly I'll tell you what he says. See, the Pushta Krishna is asking. After Prabhupada said everything, he's saying, okay Prabhupada, now can we go to question number 3? He's asking, Prabhupada, huh? No. First of all, make sure that everything is clear. Where are you so eager to progress? Tell me. Try to understand what is what. The first thing is that your destiny cannot be changed. That's a fact. But in spite of your destiny, if you try for Krishna consciousness, you can achieve spiritual success. And then why did Prahlad Maharaj say, Kaumaram Acharyat Prag? And then he says, so Prabhupada will not leave. He will go on talking for a long time. But when it comes to the material activity, like if he wants a fan, you know, you just show like this. And you have to open the window and say, you know. So he will just move his hand and immediately disciples will understand. Immediately they will do that. You know, if you say, can you please kindly get up and switch on the fan, please? You know, why should you waste so many words? Which are for your own body. Just you show like this, finished. Yeah. So, the devotee is always lazy for doing material activity. For spiritual activity, he is enthusiastic. He will do that. So, both three points he is explaining. Then there is one more point. The whole Vedic civilization is based on the understanding that destiny allows only a certain amount of material happiness in this world, and that our efforts should be therefore directed towards self-realization. Nobody is enjoying uninterrupted material happiness. That's not possible. A certain amount of material happiness and a certain amount of material distress, these both must be present always. So now one interesting question comes up here. Which will lead us to the fifth point. If destiny, Prabhupada, if destiny cannot be checked, then why not, when a child is born, simply let him run around like an animal? Isn't it? If you say that everyone, now we are coming to the question of Sangram Prabhu. If everyone's destiny is fixed, okay, everything will happen according to, you know, one's destiny. Right at the time of birth, your pleasure, pain, everything is fixed, everything is destined. So nobody is going to change, let the person run like an animal, he's saying. Then Prabhupada is saying here, no, that is the advantage of this human form of life. You can train the child spiritually, that is possible. Anyway, the discussion goes long, but here the cream point is with this point. This you can note down. Just as your advancement of so-called material happiness is already destined, just as your advancement of so-called material happiness is already destined and cannot be checked. Similarly, your advancement in spiritual life cannot be checked. If you endeavor for it, then no one can check your spiritual advancement. Here comes a very interesting point. That means, you cannot make any material advancement. That is, as if one is supposed to get happiness, nobody can stop that happiness. They will inevitably get it. If one is supposed to suffer, then one will inevitably get that also suffering. It will come. You know, the man wanted to commit suicide and he went to the top of a hill and jumped off from there into a river. In which there was a crocodile there. So when he fell right into the river, the water splashed. And the crocodile became frightened and ran away from there. Actually, the crocodile came very close to a princess and was about to eat the princess. And she was crying and all her friends ran away to the shore. She was alone. So this fellow fell right next to her. And then the crocodile ran away. And then they thought that this hero has saved her. Then immediately they brought him to the shore and he was taken to the king. And Yasoda didn't know what's happening, and they put a mukut on his head and he gave half the kingdom to him and said, marry my daughter also. So if somebody is destined to achieve happiness, he will automatically achieve happiness, even if he doesn't want it. He wanted to commit what? Suicide. But what he got? He became king of the country. So this is happiness. Same thing with suffering also. If you are supposed to suffer, no matter how much you escape, you will suffer. It is said a bird, the bird was flying, and then one fellow was chasing the bird. One fellow came to be, what was he saying, that person? He was seeing this bird. Is this bird here? Like that he was telling. So the bird became more and more fearful, and then it went towards the north. And it went to a particular place, very close to Himalayas, somewhere. And then that man kept on following, and then he came there to Himalayas. And the bird, actually, he is telling this to somebody else. No, Yamarajan is saying. And some people say bird, It's the same story. The story is like this. Whether it is bird or the old man. So the Yamaraj actually comes and disguises form and says, hey, you are here. You are not supposed to be here. You are supposed to be in that place. How are you here? No, he's asking. And that is wondering, what is he saying? Because he knows that he is destined to die. But he doesn't know where. At last he goes here and there, and at last the destiny pushes him to the same point of place where he is supposed to die, where the bird is supposed to die, and then the bird dies there or the man dies there, like that. So the point is, the destiny actually works so powerfully. It is said the karma, the results of karma come in such a way that, like a calf identifies the mother in a herd of thousands of cows. You put 1,000 cows and you send the calf will go here and there and identify exactly the mother. And the calf will drink milk only from the mother. Like that. Like that the karma will identify the person to whom it belongs to. That means the result of karma will come to you. There is one saying in Hindi, anybody knows? Har dhane pe? Dhane ka? Dhane dhane pe likha hai kane wale ka naam. Yeah. In every grain it is written who is supposed to eat this. I have lot of experience. Sometimes I have reserved something which I am supposed to eat which will be missing afterwards. Yeah. Somebody else gets it. So, dhane dhane pe likha hai. Cake cake mein likha hai. Cookie cookie mein likha hai. Isn't it? So, don't be under the illusion that I can eat cakes. Anyway, I can't digest it, don't worry. But I'm just joking. So, sometimes you try to reserve something and you find it is missing. You find it? How many of you experience? Oh, really? Are you convinced about this philosophy? Yeah, it's written like that. So that is how the karma follows very strongly, and the destiny follows that. But then Prabhupada also says interesting things. Similarly, your advancement in spiritual life cannot be checked by any material consideration. These are two opposite things. That means, in material life, no matter how much you work hard, again and again the destiny will push you to only get the facility which you deserve. That's all. You cannot change it much. But in spiritual life is totally independent of any material considerations. Some of you can tell me some examples to prove that spiritual life is beyond all material conditions. Depend on material conditions, you give examples and show that how. There is one very famous verse, Gaurang Prabhu used to quote it often. To show that how spiritual life is beyond all material considerations. Yeah. Ram's name, and he could achieve higher destination. I am looking for other examples where some material conditioning, like many of us say, my past material conditioning is affecting me so much that I cannot practice spiritual. Sometimes we say like that, isn't it? Some examples of material conditioning show still how one became elevated, yeah? Valmiki, exactly. Valmiki is one example, yeah? Prabhupada's Western disciples, exactly, yeah. Then, for example, Dhruva Maharaj is a small boy. Can a 5-year-old boy see Lord Vishnu face to face by severe austerities and penances? Or Prahalad, such young boys. What about animals and birds? Some animals you can think of? Yeah? You think Jadabharat, yeah. Jadabharat is a Paramahamsa, anyway. Yeah. Born a Brahmana family also, by the way. Yeah. Gajendra, yeah. Gajendra is a good example, yeah. Jatayu, isn't it? And some more human beings born in lower castes you can think of? Haridas Thakur, born in a Muslim family. Yeah. Then? Jaya Madai. Yeah. Regarding, you can think of Nishara community, Guha, isn't it? Billamangala Thakur, Kubja, Shabari. So, giving many examples of material conditionings. Either lower birth, or somebody born in lower species, or somebody born in very, very sinful atmosphere. So, Ajamila, even when he was a Brahmana, he could not, tolerate the allurements offered to him. Even as a Brahmin, he was plucking flowers, comes in a Brahmin family, just Sandhyavandan regularly 3 times a day. Even after doing all that, still he could not resist the temptation offered by Maya, isn't it? But after he became a Lord, after he started chanting Narayana's names, surrounded by the products of sin, all those children around him, when he saw the Vishnu Dutas immediately, when he saw the Yamadutas, immediately he cried out the name of Narayana. And that one crying of name Narayana, that saved him. That liberated him. That helped him to go back to Vaikuntha after 12 days of practice. That means the name of the Lord is so powerful and can be recited by anybody, any fallen person. So you cannot, sometimes you say he's a muff. So don't call anyone a muff or a bum. Tomorrow he may become more advanced than you. Like that crazy Peter was there. There was a crazy Peter always lying in the ISKCON temples, People thought he's a lazy bum, lying at the doorstep. So they thought he's a good for nothing fellow. Later on, he learned Sanskrit and became Kushakrata Das. And his Sanskrit knowledge and level is so high, you can't understand many of his writings. So he has written almost 120-130 books in ISKCON. Translated all the Goswami literatures. They're available in CD now, if you see. So Krishnankur is fond of those books. So Crazy Peter becomes Kushakrata Prabhu by Krishna's mercy. So that means real progress can be made where? In a spiritual platform. There is real progress. The reason is, the whole world is designed as a place for the living entity to reform. So, when the living entity tries to endeavor materially, trying to make progress, Krishna sends one special person. Who is that? Durga Devi. Prabhupada says, those who are materialists and try for material progress, they accept Durga as the mother. And those who accept spiritual progress, they accept who as the mother? Radharani as the mother. And one accepts Srimati Radharani, then one makes tremendous progress. Higher than Krishna, Srimati Radharani keeps lifting us up. Come, come, come. Come to spiritual world and she gives abundant mercy. Karuna Kurumai, Karuna Bharite, Sanak Sanatana Varinita Charite. She is personification of love and mercy. And you can see her hands, very graceful hands, giving mercy. So she gives mercy to all her devotees and makes them progress more and more, realize Krishna more and more, bring them closer to Krishna. She gives advancement. But what is Durga's nature? She gives progress more and more. She chops the head of people who cut goats for her. People cut goats for her by cutting the neck of goats and she cuts their neck. Durga. Actually she doesn't cut generally, but she punishes them, but if they don't realize, still at last she cuts their neck also. So Durga actually is very insurmountable, very, very powerful. The more one tries to progress materially, one gets nice kicks from Durga. With the Trishul, she gives kick. She gives good beating. That's why materially, one actually doesn't make progress, but one can imagine that I am making progress. One can imagine. Unfortunately, the modern scenario is such that many things make us think that it is progress. Many, many things. When we look around, I have a mobile, I have a computer, I have this, I have that facility, going in car. There is a kind of fascination of these facilities. You all agree with this, isn't it? There is a kind of fascination, isn't it? When you look at this, the glamour is created. Like Ishwar Chandra Vidya Sagarina, when he went with his simple dress, he was not permitted. When he went to his coat, suit and tie, he was permitted, isn't it? Similarly, when people have this glamour of the modern luxuries and facilities, then people think, they are advanced. Because they are materially appearing to be advanced. And other people are appearing to be not advanced. So the real advancement has to be measured in which platform? A spiritual platform. So that's the fifth point we... Spiritual platform, destiny is fixed. But in spiritual platform, your progress cannot be checked. Such a beautiful word Prabhupada is using. So your progress cannot be checked. You can go on progressing no matter what situation you are born in and proper problems and all. But if you become a spiritualist, then your material destiny can be changed. That That's another new addition. Yeah. Huh? That's another additional point Prabhupada makes here. So even if you want to approach Krishna, see here Prabhupada makes them. Destiny. If you try for Krishna consciousness, you can achieve spiritual success. Otherwise, why did Prahlad Maharaj urge his friends, Kaumara Machare, take Krishna consciousness up from your very childhood? If destiny cannot be changed, then why was Prahlad Maharaj urging this? Generally, destiny means your material future, Prabhupada saying. Generally, destiny means your material future. That you cannot change. But even that can be changed when you are in spiritual life. If you come to spiritual life, even that can be changed. See? That means spiritualists are at the greatest advantage. One thing is, there is no progress in material life. The real progress is on which platform? Spiritual platform only. How? Because in spiritual platform, we understand that I am undergoing this hard struggle for existence. Manashashtani indriyani, prakritisthani karshati. Then life after life in a dog's body, cat's body, human body have come now. So you want to give up that struggle. So you perform spiritual activities and you are making progress in spiritual life. Becoming 100% pure and turning back to Godhead, there is progress. And material life, we gave examples to show how in material life, practically there is no progress in material life. Because the pain or pleasure reappears in another form. Just like in energy definition we say, energy can either be created nor destroyed. Energy disappearing in one form, reappears in another form without any loss or gain. Isn't it? If you transform mechanical energy into electrical energy or electrical energy into mechanical energy, it just transforms like that. So remember the gooseberry example, sack and gooseberry. You keep putting gooseberry here, it's coming out from another place. The content of the gooseberry packet is the same, you can't increase that. So quantum of pleasure and pain is fixed actually. So if somebody takes the Krishna consciousness seriously, then Krishna feels that I want to change even his material. For example, if a devotee is supposed to undergo a fracture in a hand or a leg, so instead of that, Lord may just cut his finger a little bit. You put a bandage, in a couple of days it gets all right. Like a brahmachari is recently telling me, some of the brahmacharis, Prabhuji, it's very surprising that we get small sicknesses, and they are also cured very fastly. They said, before we became devotees, sometimes we used to have prolonged sickness, It used to go for many, many days like that. But after we became devotees, you get a little headache, little stomachache, a little fever, and then not even 3 days, 2 days, Just one day you eat some medicine, immediately you're all right, again you're back to service. So I was telling them, it seems that Krishna wants you in service, He doesn't want to waste your time. So He cures you very fast. So, Krishna can reduce a huge punishment into a token punishment for his own devotee. Because Krishna understands that, this fellow has now become a devotee, If he was a karmi, I would have given him good dose. Now that he has become a devotee, why to, give him the full dose? Now it's not required. Anyway, it's like a law-abiding citizen, Once, like in the jail also they do that. If you, if you are very loyal in the jail, you are not rebelling against anybody, fighting with police, you are very regulated in your habits, and whatever duty they give you, do it. Then what happens? They give you promotion there. They may give you promotion to, instead of breaking the stones, they may tell you, just take care of the library and type some letters in a day and do some little gardening. They give work like that. So similarly, Krishna also feels that, my devotee is, now he's become a devotee, he's obedient. Okay, let me reduce the punishment for him. And he can do that. Why? He is the person who is above the law of karma. And he can manipulate the karma in the way he wants. That is why even if you want a better material life, it's better for one to come to Krishna. Isn't it? So that becomes the sixth point. That means, as Prabhupada says, even the material life can be changed when you are in spiritual life. 9:20. Note it down. I would request all of you to go back and read this. This is actually the thing which we discussed today. This is coming under the heading of Progress Beyond Progress. That's the title. This is in the book Civilization and Transcendence. So when you go back during this week, if time permits, please kindly take the chapter, read it, and these 5 points, try to digest them. These 5 points we discussed today. These are very, very important points. As a devotee, we should be heart of hearts convinced that Krishna consciousness is the real progress. Material progress is no progress. It's like a dog running on four wheels. they are running on, dog running on four legs, they are running on four wheels as Prabhupada says. Real progress on spiritual platform. So, if you understand these things properly, even with the intellect and mind and soul, it's so convincing. And actually there is practically no progress in material life. Like, you know, Prabhupada is saying about accumulating so much, $1,000 becomes $2,000 or $5,000. At the time of death, all that is stripped off. Now, people may say, why do you always think of death? But death is inevitable. How can we not talk about it? It's going to come one day. Yeah, a wise person should think long term, not just immediately. Immediately now. Even now, immediately, even if you have a lot of wealth, our ability to enjoy is less. How much can you enjoy? How long can you enjoy? Both questions you can ask. So, all of you noted on this? Although there are many other things which could be said, I think this is good enough, what we saw now. And this, if you understood this, this is good enough. So wonderfully designed that, you know, the focus is given on protection of five people. Who are they? If women, for example, if women are protected, they will be chaste. If a woman is chaste, then husband is peaceful, it is said. If a woman is not chaste, then the whole family becomes disturbed. Like the other day, one devotee was saying, nowadays in America, books come out, when your father leaves, or when your mother leaves, ... So there are books like that in America. What does it mean? When a mother divorces, a father divorces, you know, like that. So children are reading those books now, when they are small children. Can you imagine? So, if a wife is chaste, then the whole family is peaceful. Husband is happy, children are happy, like that. So in India, in Vedic culture, you'll find the chastity of woman is very much given importance and protection is given like that. Similarly, protection of children. When children are protected from onslaught of bad association, then they will progress in Krishna consciousness very nicely. They'll become valuable children to home, nation and for the whole world. They'll become really wise children. Similarly, when you protect an old man in his old age, then you are helping him to have no anxiety, have peace of mind, and then progress to a better body in the next life. Because at the time of death, he should peacefully die, you know, thinking of Krishna, planning his life nicely, go to Vrindavan or somewhere. Similarly, protection of cows. If you protect the cows, you can get milk which will nourish the brain, by which one the spiritual acumen will be increased. Then, for Brahmanas, Brahmanas are the ones who establish the spiritual culture. If they are protected, then the whole society is protected. Brahmanas are most important to protect. Brahmanas should not be tortured. Brahmanas should not be starved. Brahmanas should not be neglected. Brahmanas should never be insulted. Brahmanas should not be thought of as a parasite in society. Because Brahmana is the most valuable asset of the society who actually amounts to the actual progress of society. They are actual Brahmanas. So, the Vedic society intelligently focuses on the protection of these five people, by which the whole Varnashrama Dharma can make progress. I would like to conclude with one last point, which I read in one of the purports of Prabhupada in Bhagavatam. There he says, the Vanaprastha Ashram and Sannyasa Ashram are for the detached people. And the Grihastha Ashram is also kept available for the attached people. But the Brahmachari is one who is simultaneously attached and detached. Prabhupada says, I'll read that out. The Varnas are classifications of different occupations, and Ashrama Dharma is a gradual progress. Both are interrelated and one is dependent on the other. Main purpose of Ashrama Dharma is to awaken knowledge and detachment. Two things. What is the purpose of Varnashrama Dharma? To awaken knowledge and detachment. This is real progress. The Brahmacharya Ashram is training ground for the prospective candidates. In this ashram it is instructed that this material world is not actually the home of the living being. The conditioned souls under material bondage are prisoners of matter, and therefore self-realization is the ultimate aim of life. The whole system of Ashram Dharma is a means to detachment. One who fails to assimilate the spirit of detachment is allowed to enter into family life with the same spirit of detachment. Therefore, one who attains detachment may at once adopt the fourth order, namely sannyas order, and thus live on charity only and not accumulate wealth, but just keep body and soul together for the ultimate realization. Household life is for one who is attached, and the vanaprastha and sannyas orders of life are for those who are detached from material life. The Brahmacharya Ashram is especially meant for training both the attached and detached. See how scientific it is, you see. So in Brahmacharya Ashram, one is simultaneously attached and detached. So after this training, if one has not solidified the spirit of detachment, then he is allowed to enter into grihastha ashram. And then what happens, Prabhupada says, interesting thing in another purport. Although while leading the life of grihastha, he already has experience of the detachment from before. And he sees how the worldly life is miserable. And then by the time when he becomes 50, panchashivurdham, vanam gajet, he is able to easily detach himself from the worldly encumbrances and take vanaprastha order. And if possible, sannyasa order later on. That one without such BTG Brahmachari training, what happens to a person? If right from day one, directly has been married, then he lifelong just spends his life making the family his an ultimate goal, satisfaction of the family. So, in this way, the Varnashrama very intelligently is planned. It's meant for awakening, knowledge and detachment. So, it's very scientifically designed so that we can go back to Godhead. That is real progress. Otherwise, accumulating, buying more and more based on credit cards, buy car, buy bungalow, accumulate wealth, live a luxurious life. But all the things you accumulate, they are all external. They won't give any satisfaction to God. He nicely made a point, Vivekananda made the point. He's like a fish out of water. But this progress, the awakening of knowledge and detachment, really amounts to genuine satisfaction of heart. So, so we don't have to worry whether you are Brahmachari or Grihastha or Vanaprastha Sannyas. All of them have their role to play very wonderfully. Ultimately, we can come to the point of awakening knowledge and detachment and go back to Godhead. So this has to be understood as the real progress. So we should not unnecessarily increase the material fever. You know that story of that mother-in-law and the servant, you know? You know, daughter came to the home and said, your servant, you know, she has got 103 degree Fahrenheit and you got 101. The mother-in-law became wild. Mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, I think. Mother-in-law became wild. You foolish doctor, I'll kick you out. You will get another doctor, she said. Why? Because you are saying that my daughter-in-law has a higher degree, you should say more for me. She said, I have only 101 and she has got 103. You will have a doctor who will verify me more. So Prabhupada says, in this way, all the worldly countries are competing to increase the material fever. So what should you do? Should you increase the material fever or reduce it? What should you do? Reduce it. Go to MG Road. Will your material fever reduce or increase? Increase. It's like, you know, you should not agitate the senses of one another. Like a female should dress in such a way that, you know, the man after seeing her should immediately feel that, you know, she is a sadhvi. You know, I should not even think any lust in my mind. You should feel like that. Similarly, when a man appears saintly, a woman gives distance and gives way, like that. That should be the culture. But the woman, you know, go with a half-dressed body in the road, you know, immediately man's mind and senses are agitated. Man becomes, and she starts following her. Similarly, man shows glamour to woman. I have so much money, I have a car, I have this. He wants to allure her. So people are just trying to pull one another's mind and senses and simply agitate everyone else's mind and senses. Foolish culture. Very, very foolish culture. But in very culture, you see, you have to awaken what? Knowledge and detachment. That's the goal by which we can practice spiritual life so nicely and we can go back to God. That is real progress. So, economic development in terms of converting a hut into a skyscraper is totally defeated with Prabhupada. It's demolished totally. Srila Prabhupada ki! Bhakta Vrinda ki!